morning, honorable members. Let me also welcome and greet all our invited guests and our voluntary guests who, out of the passion they have for the industry, decided to join us. So they are, you are all equally welcomed, including the staff of the committee. We are meeting today again as the portfolio committee, still under the dark cloud of the tragic incident that took place in Mpumalanga at the Lille mine, which painfully so, it seems that there's no solution for now on site, according to the information that we are receiving. I think it's a matter that obviously post the recess, we'll have to again find what we think we can do as a committee. But I think, as we have said before, our hearts, our prayers, and goes to those families, and hopefully the 6 months that is anticipated might become much shorter than that, and we are able to put this matter to rest to the recovery of those workers, regardless of the condition, obviously. But also, as we meet, we are meeting a clear understanding that we are grappling in an industry that is faced with serious challenges. Be it the economic climate that has got implication in terms of job security, or be it the sustainability of the industry, based on different reasons, obviously, that we share. And I must say that hopefully all parties will be able some time to find a lasting solution where we could be able to focus on the key issues that we are supposed to be doing as the committee. Being the case as it is, are there any apologies?
Good morning to members and the guests. I've got apologies from Mr. Malema and Mr. Chaffee. Thank you.
I think that the apologies will have to be regarded as standing apologies until such time we declare presence of people. Otherwise, there are things that are not surprising. But there's nothing we can do again. What is empowered by the rules of Parliament. Affirmative.
No, Chair, I was. First, greetings, colleagues. Morning, Chair. Just wanted, just for the record, to be noted by the Portfolio Committee. Even though we may not be able to do much, but the continued non-attendance of members, particularly I must point out the absence of Honorable Malema since March last year, has failed to attend this portfolio committee. And I would like it noted, Chairperson, because on other forums or on other platforms, they take the stand that they do attend committee meetings and they want to speak the loudest on the work that we do as committees, yet they totally fail to attend. So I just wanted it to be noted. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. If I'm not mistaken, these days you call it 3-3. I would say during my time, it was standard 1. Not that I was the best noisemaker. Maybe so that someone who was given the responsibility to write noisemakers was someone who didn't like me. And when I was not at school, the teacher the following day was given a list of noisemakers. I happened to find my name in the list of noisemakers, and when I stood up, I said I was not in class. The person couldn't answer, how could I make noise when I'm not at school? Sometimes I'm sure we write people's approaches even when they're present and say an apology for Mr. or Mrs. So, Ms. or Honorable So-and-so, and only to find that that person, because of consistency and absence to meeting, the apology can be written in advance and it will be difficult to erase it. So we must just encourage honorable members that it's better to be written present than to be written absent and the purpose that you were present in the meeting. But I'm sure we will take note of those issues. Welcome, Honorable Marina. Unfortunately, we wanted to wait for you. It's time that dictated that we must start before you arrived. So, Honorable Piggy said he's only in the committee, so he's the only one who can declare the meeting to continue or not. So we had to start. Okay, yeah, I like people must smile. So this parliament is busy. At least when you go to that house, you change and become other characters. Yeah, I must create an environment where all of you, you can have space. I know by 3 o'clock it will be something else, so just have this pleasure of being in the court. Okay, on that note, we've got, I'm just 5 minutes ahead, behind. We've got a briefing from the, I said yesterday, sometimes it's good to write names in full. Not in full as W-O. Is F-U, not C-O-O, in full, so that we don't make mistakes. There's a crisis in that house sometimes where people can find it difficult to make a distinction between the FF plus and the EFF. So we don't want to make a mistake here of an FFC and with FF plus. So we write in full. We've got the Financial Fiscal Commission that is going to be giving an analysis of the budget of the department, including its entities. Obviously, it will be, I don't want to lead with it, clarify to them what do we think is necessary, particularly in terms of compliance and expenditure patterns. Then we have the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, which will also be making an analysis of the departments in terms of the priority outcomes for and the rest of other related matters. We will then have a briefing by the researcher. And then we will have the minutes, and then we'll have the announcement. Let me say this out of fairness. Out of fairness, ordinarily, if it was other people, I don't want you tomorrow when you are invited, you then start to weigh invitation. I want you when you are invited, you make sure that you are at the top of the priority of the committees that you can attend because of the generosity that you get from the chair. So I'm going to be generous. Otherwise, under normal circumstances, when people present here, we allow all of them to present and then we start to ask questions so that they don't present and leave. So, but because we're not an unusual sitting, let me say first impressions last. I won't make you to feel regretting being in this committee because you were detained when you have done. We will allow when you have made your presentations to ask questions of clarity and then the responses. That is the same thing with the DME, DPME. We will allow the questions of clarity and then to make responses. Because we like people to be here, you will still be at liberty to remain even after that until we have exhausted. Obviously, we may not have an interest because the researcher will finally, I'm not sure, Dr. Nicole, but I don't have to say you only when there is a man. That's the difference is that between the two of you, there is a man. The difference is that the other one has a short hair, the other one has got a grayish hair. So you will decide whether you do it together. And then after we will deal with the consideration of the minutes and announcement. Is there any mover for the agenda as proposed? Honorable Mandela?
Thank you, sir. I'd like to move for the adoption of the agenda as outlined. Thank you.
Anyone? Honorable Piginini?
Thank you very much, sir. I wish to second, sir.
I was going to ask that does this agenda reflect what you wanted to see in the as the owner of the committee? Okay. Being the case as it may, we will give in to the FSC. Obviously, you'll be able to introduce yourselves, and then be open to. We will ask questions of after that. So over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members for the invitation. My name is Bongani Kumalo. I chair and I'm also the chief executive of the Financial and Fiscal Commission. Let me start off by, on behalf of the Commission, echoing the sentiments around the tragic events at Yale Mine. As outlined by the Chairperson, I think we all share the same sentiments for, in particular, the families and also the colleagues of those miners that are still trapped in that unfortunate incident. I must also share, introduce the team that I'm with here. I'm with, on my left, Dr. Hamed Amusa, who is our program manager for public finance and fiscal policy and macroeconomics, at the Financial and Fiscal Commission. And then on my right, I have Mr. Andrew Exton, who is the parliamentary liaison officer and is based in our Cape Town office here. Having said that, let me move to the next slide. I'm sure that because this is not the first time, and I must say, I do appreciate the offer that you have made, your generosity. It's not the first time that I've been to this committee, so let me appreciate the generosity of being allowed the freedom of choosing whether we want to leave or we want to stay after our inputs and the engagement by the committee. That's truly appreciated. I think that slide basically just outlined the role and function of the Financial and Fiscal Commission, which I think we are all familiar with, except maybe to say that in the last year, the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act was amended to strengthen a section of the Act that deals with the need for organs of state to consult with the Commission when dealing with decisions that would have financial and fiscal implications on another or a separate sphere of government. So that's one measure. It basically forces all organs of state to do that. But obviously the Commission must make its recommendations to Parliament as was originally envisaged in the Constitution and still report on those areas of work. Now to move on to the next slide, I think what is maybe important is to just indicate that the macroeconomic environment that we find ourselves in at this point in time is a very difficult one, and as one doesn't want to go back to repeat what has already been highlighted by the Minister of Finance, but I have to say that as a commission, back at the onset of the global economic crisis, we did indicate a situation that would likely arise in terms of the South African economy responding to the global economic crisis. So we presented three scenarios at that particular point. The one scenario was a business as usual scenario, which was based on the fact that the South African economy would respond and the global economy would recover very quickly, which is like a normal type of a business cycle. And then we had what we called a moderate scenario, where the recovery of the global economy would be a little bit dragged, but not too far dragged. And then we had the severe scenario, where we said the severe scenario is one where the recovery of the global economy is dragged out to such an extent that the South African economy does not go back to its original growth path, which was the path before or prior to the global economic crisis. And in that path, we would recall, as members of parliament, that the then Minister of Finance, Minister Trevor Manuel, used to come with fruits when he was presenting his budget and dish out these types of presents, because the economy was performing very well. Now, the outcome of the global economic crisis on the South African economy, due to the close link to that global economy, has been has turned out to such an effect that we have gotten to realize what we call the severe scenario, which basically suggested that we're not going back to where we were, plus the recovery would take a longer period than we would anticipate. So now we are in a situation where the South African economy has been exposed in terms of its resilience and weaknesses. And part of that would be what one would refer to as the structural dynamics in the South African economy. I think for those of you who follow some of these conversations, you would be hearing words like structural adjustment and all of those types of things that need to happen to the economy. But what has become very clear in this whole scenario is that one area that was assisting South African economy during the global economic crisis was the commodity sector, and mining is a critical player in that area. Now, unfortunately, because our work in or our production processes in mining, basically our output is in the form of commodities and processed, and that is subject to global trends in commodity markets, and we could go into a lot of discussions around what happens in commodity markets. I mean, there are a lot of stories about people that influence these and all of those, but we're not going to get into those details. What we know is that the prices of commodities have been depressed. Now, what we have tried to do in this graph there is to try and track what has actually been happening with respect to the mining, a mineral sector, and the global economic markets. Now, what we see is that during the global economic crisis, or prior to the global economic crisis, there was generally, you could see that the metal price index, the prices were actually moving up. And then just before, there was a decline. I mean, that red line basically tracks the metal price index. And then there was suddenly an increase. 2009, you start getting that spike in the metal price index. That is a very critical explanatory variable in terms of what is happening to the South African economy. And it's linked to the global economy and the commodity market. That period was a period where there was massive demand for commodities by the Chinese economy. And when that demand started to taper off, you can see what is then happening to that. And if you try to link that to our economic growth path and our trade balance in particular, you find that we are experiencing challenges that are linked to that. So there is something that needs to be done in mining in order that we move this side. Now, if I also try to recall some of the recommendations that we made in terms of what the response is to the global economic crisis, what responses were available. One of the key areas was around research and development and innovation. And we were calling for the states to put more money in those types of areas. And part of the reason was to try and address some of the issues around the what we're actually doing with our mining, because it's a backbone of the economy, declining in terms of its contribution to gross value added, but quite an important one in terms of export earnings. So we can't run away from it in that sense. So we can talk about what government's response is around those areas where and where the investments are, but I think with respect to mining, when Hamed comes back to talk about the budgets for the different types of programs that exist in mining, we'll probably see where these issues are going. Now, so the next slide, Hamed, despite the substantial decline in gold output, growth in non-gold exports ensured average growth in overall mining mineral production remained positive between 1994 and 2008. On average, between 2010 and 2015, gold output declined by 5%, non-gold increased by 2.4%, and mining sector production increased by 1.04%. So that was some kind of a cushioning effect on the South African economy and its responsiveness. So it's an important player in that context. The next slide, Ahmed. The next slide basically shows the importance of the mining sector from an economic point of view. Now this, basically what we are saying here is that the dynamics of South Africa's economy are continuously changing. There's the general decline in the role of the primary sector, especially mining contribution to gross value added, continues. Now, I must say that when we say there's a declining contribution to gross value added, it probably means that from a structural point of view, there are certain sectors that are becoming more and more important. And over time, obviously, that's what one would expect to happen to an economy, because you also want to have downstream industries that are linked. In effect, you want to use this primary sector to feed onto your downstream industries through your beneficiation. So you add value to the primary products. And now, if you are shifting away from your primary economy, but you are not, so you still have these mining activities, and they are very important. If you export the commodities, you're getting a lot of foreign exchange for it, but you are not actually adding value to them. And there is nothing that is linking that type of an economy to the broader economy domestically, then obviously we will have a problem going forward. And I think it's important that we highlight that as an important area that policy must actually be looking towards. So there's a notable decline in growth and share of mine sector gross value added, from almost 14% average share of total GVA between 1994 to 2004 to around about 9% 2005 to the present. So there's something that is happening that we need to understand and see what we can do about it. The role of the mining sector in facilitating investment, I think in the recent past we have seen a lot of activity and a lot of conversations taking place around how we facilitate investment and therefore create the conditions necessary for the economic growth that we so deeply need in the South African economy. And as I've already indicated, the commodity super cycle has contributed to significant growth in the mining sector investments. Mining share of investment is now at levels last seen pre-1994, an average of 11% of total investments since 2002. It is notable that the performance of growth in mining investment has mirrored the global dynamic around the demand for minerals and mining commodities. Again, this basically means that you cannot sit on your laurels. So in order to keep those investments useful, they have to be linked and be robust when the global when there are global changes in the commodity market prices. And so again, it brings into play the issue of adding value to the investment rather than just pumping this into the primary sector. Now, the next graph basically shows this story around the commodity prices and employment in the mining sector. Prior to 2000, there was a lot of investment in capital, in equipment in the mining sector. That's basically what one would call deepening capital intensity of processes as a result of the conditions in which most of these mines are finding themselves in. It's probably one of the parameters. But after that, we see the commodity boom period. There is an upward trend in employment in the mining sector. And then suddenly the global economic crisis sets in. We have a sudden dip, but suddenly the Chinese economy and its demand for commodities starts coming up. And then we see that, and the employment rises, and then now it dips that demand, and then you can see that employment in mining is actually tapering off, going down actually. So there's a relationship between what happens globally to global demand for these commodities and the employment in the mining sector. The contribution to formal sector employment has declined now to less than 6% of total employment. Rising costs and declining demand have resulted in restructuring programs with significant risks facing jobs in the mining sector. So there is definitely something to worry about in terms of what the mining sector is contributing to employment. It's not a very small employer in the economy, and it's an area of concern. Now, just to look at what one would call the key points that we can think about before I ask Samet to come into the departmental issues of the budget. The cornerstone gold sector upon which the modern South African economy was built continues to experience difficulties with average annual production growth of minus 5% between 2010 and 2050. While growth in non-gold output has ensured a relative recovery in growth of total mining production, there are concerns that remain. Between 2010 and 2015, average growth in mining share of total value added has remained negative. The slowdown in global demand for commodities has seen growth in investment levels decline from peaks recorded during the commodity super cycle average of 27% from 2006-2009 versus 0.87% between 2010 and 2015. The impact of the rebalancing of the Chinese economy on sales by the mining sector is clearly visible from the analysis of the numbers. Now, there's also issues that one has to look at in terms of what are the areas that must also concern us. There's the global economic outlook, which does not look very promising in the short to medium term, and therefore has an impact on our own macroeconomic outlook. Secondly, we are in a period, as the Minister of Finance emphasized when tabled this budget, of slowing down public expenditure growth, or what we've called fiscal consolidation. There have been some cuts in budgets, even though in real terms there's been no real decline in public spending. There has definitely been a slowing down in the growth of public spending. So we haven't reached a period where we say we are experiencing negative growth in public expenditure, which would then be referred to as fiscal austerity. But we are in a period where we are actually slowing down public expenditure. Now, when you slow down public expenditure, what tends to happen is that there's also a slowing down or a reduction in aggregate demand in the economy. And that also has an impact on your economic growth targeting. So you have to find a point where you have to balance your growth interests and also your interest in controlling public expenditure, and that is a very complicated balance to strike. So I think we have to be aware of that. We also need to, I think, for the sector itself, the issues around transformation and consensus on the right economic and ownership strategy for the mining sector. So there's a lot of policy activity around this and legislative imperatives in this area that also would need to be fast-tracked in order to provide a lot of certainty to potential investors and potential role players. There is also the reality of the mining related labor unrest. And they are very related to the frustrations that are experienced in the mining industry. And they do have an impact on investments. There are areas around nationalization, but I would put those under the same issues around the legislation and policy position and strategies around ownership of mines. We also have some issues that one might want to be, in fact, that we have to address, the relationship between mining activities, traditional leadership, and also the municipalities regarding local economic development issues, including issues around human settlements and social services within the areas where these mines are actually operating. So these are creating certain tensions around communities that need to also be looked at. Chairperson, with your permission, let me hand over to Dr. Amusa here to just take you through the budget story of the department.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for having us this morning. My presentation on the departmental analysis around the annual performance, the strategic and performance plans, is pretty much a high-level summary and a snapshot. I think our colleagues at the Department of Performance and Monitoring Evaluation will do a greater justice to the work that I'll present here. But it's just a highlight and to raise a number of issues that the Commission feels are worth noting. I think the first thing is that within the NDP, which has become the basic framework governing economic policies in South Africa, there's a link, quite a significant one, looking for the mineral resources of South Africa to play a distinct and specific role in growing the economic base of communities, especially, and performing its role in granting economic access and opportunity to regions and economies where these resources are found. So within the growth path plan and the new national development plan, we see aspects related to issues of skills development, we see aspects related to issues of infrastructure, we see issues related to matters of regulation, all needing to come together to benefit the mineral sector in terms of its role and how to play within economic growth. What we have noted is that the departmental strategic plan has now aligned itself quite firmly with the national development plan and the tenets of the national growth plan, which is quite welcome. And we recognize that, as you see in the slide here, a number of key goals which we feel have now aligned itself with the national development plan. Issues around increased investment and promoting increased investment in the mineral sector, transformation issues, as we see with the new legislation around the mining and development legislation that is currently being debated, ensuring more sustainable beneficiation of mineral resources, as Commissioner Kumalo pointed out, the need for value add within the sector, for that sector to have critical forward linkages in their processing and employment creation and how to benefit the South African economy, and also more efficient and development-oriented plans that the department itself has started to think about in its role as an oversight body in terms of how mineral resources are extracted and used within the country. So we were quite glad that the department's strategic goals are now aligned with the NDP. It's now a question of how they implement it, and I think the DPME will give us some more detailed information as to what their own evaluation has come up with. In terms of the departmental budget and progress, as we are well aware of, we are still operating within a phase of fiscal constraints and fiscal consolidation, in which national departments are seeing what we term haircuts in their resources allocation from the budget. What we note is that despite the cuts that the country has had to face in the consolidation and the constraint phase, the department's budget has increased. The issue is the departmental average growth has slowed down. So essentially what we're seeing is that there's still growth in the budget. It's only that they slowed down in the rate of the growth. So between 2012 and 2015, when the growth was almost 25% in the budget allocations, it is now slowing down to about 5.85 within the medium term. So there's still growth, but only that it has slowed down quite considerably. And the budget of the department, although increasing in the medium term, has experienced a bit of a disinflation in its growth. So that's the main thing we note in terms of the departmental budget. We see that in terms of average growth rate, the biggest chunk of the largest growth is experienced within the mineral regulation. As we are well aware of, there are now processes in place to reform a range of legislative bills that need to come in line with the Constitution, first and foremost, but also to create what is seen as those critical linkages through which communities can actually be able to become partners and holders of South Africa's economic growth and ensure that we're able to achieve shared growth that we've always talked about since 2006. So the regulation itself is the fastest growing or the largest, has experienced the largest average growth within the medium term. We're a bit concerned about aspects around mineral policy and promotion in which the budget allocation is decreasing average compared to the average growth that it experienced of 51% between the last medium term. It's now declined by about -1.8%. And this has some implications that I'll talk to later. In terms of appropriation per program, now that we have this consolidation and we are talking about maintaining constraints, there's a push towards the effective use of resources by all spheres of government, a more efficient and more effective use of resources, and to ensure that leakages and wastages are kept to a minimum. And we're quite happy that the department itself has ensured that it has met its budget targets, especially when you look at the variation between the appropriation, what is budgeted for, and the actual expenditure. The department has demonstrated a very good record in minimizing that variation. As you can see in that graph, when you look at the expenditure as a percentage of final appropriation, the department has ensured that it spent what it was budgeted for. So this points to good budgeting practice, good utilization of resources, and also ensuring that you're able to minimize wastages and leakages within your resource allocation and utilization. In terms of budget composition, we highlight two issues. The first is that the largest program within the department is the Mineral Policy and Promotion Program. Essentially, it's an investment-driven initiative meant to create a large chunk of capital investment within the mineral and upstream petroleum sectors, and also research and development into new avenues, especially around the issue of shale gas, and assisting small and medium-scale enterprises that are trying to gain a foothold within the extraction process and also within the beneficiation process and value-added chains created by the mineral resources sector. We, however, note that the smallest program is on the promotion of mine health and safety. It's quite a when you look at what the chairperson had just said earlier, the incidence of the unfortunate case of the Lily Mine disaster. South Africa has performed quite well over the past 5 years in reducing the incidences of mine disasters. I think 2014 and 2015 recorded in the past 50 years the lowest amount of mine disasters. However, there's still a number of a range of issues that go beyond mine disasters. The exposure to environmental hazards still remains a distinct problem within the mineral sector. Issues of tuberculosis, for instance, asbestosis, that has, even though asbestos is no longer has been decommissioned in South Africa since 2001, you still have mining areas where the air pollution, environmental hazards still remains a big concern. And going forward has an impact on the health of communities that reside within these areas. We need to come up with concrete plans, and the department and the regulator itself and the oversight body in charge of this need to go beyond issues of reactive to mine disasters, but actually being proactive in seeking ways to reduce the overexposure that a number of communities have been exposed to over the past 50 years, and not only dealing with the physical aspects, but dealing with the health, long-term health-related aspects that we continue to see emerging within a number of communities. So we are quite concerned that mine health and safety seems to receive the smallest amount of resources in terms of the budget composition. And this needs to be addressed in terms of what the Commission feels. In terms of the spend of, when you look at the economic classification and spending, we see that capital budget takes quite a large chunk of allocations, especially around transfers and services. But we have the concern that capital assets itself receives only 1% of departmental resources. As we are well aware of, the ability of the department to carry out its mandate will hinge greatly on the ability to leverage on the capital that it has an ability to perform its oversight and regulatory role in that particular aspect. In terms of the breakdown, when you look in more detailed breakdown, we note that the compensation of employees, which has been the second highest after transfers and subsidies over the years, and has been the largest chunk, growing chunk within the various economic classifications, is going down. Perhaps indicative of the department's own alignment of its internal resources to take into account the call to government of a need to address the wage bill and a need to ensure that the wage bill does not spiral out of control. So we see that in the medium term, it has decelerated. The growth in that particular aspect, the compensation of employees, is decelerating. We see that the purchase of goods and services is now becoming the largest growth driver in terms of economic specification over the medium term. We're still concerned that capital assets records still the lowest growth in the medium term, 26%. And we wait to see how that will impact on the activities of the department. In terms of the department entities, I'll not go too much into it, but much of the department's budget entities fall into three main areas. The aspect around research and development, in which you'll find your mind health and safety and your council for geosciences. The aspect around regulation, where you have the South African Diamonds and Precious Minerals Regulator. And you have your economic development stand, which is how the state seeks to play a role, an increased role, in promoting, using its, leveraging its size and capacity to promote activities within the mining sector. And that aspect is the state diamond trader. So you have your research and development, your regulation and economic development strand. When we look at the budget for the entities, we find that the economic development aspect related to how the state wants to play a more developmental role within the mineral sector has the highest budget in terms of your entities. But your South African regulator has the smallest budget. We're concerned, we're not really concerned, but we noted that all the entities have a negative average growth rate in the medium term. With only the state's own playing a role within the economic development role that it seeks to play, receiving a positive average growth rate in the medium term. The biggest concern from the Commission's perspective is that research and development, the allocation to research and development, is not growing as fast as we want it to be. As I pointed out earlier, research and development means that you begin to be more innovative, you find ways to be more innovative in playing a role within the mineral sector, you find a more innovative way to approach how you use and leverage small and medium scale enterprises within mine communities and making sure that people participate. But also you have to find research and development to address the challenges that the mineral sector faces in terms of the provision of framework and guidelines to ensure reduced risk of hazardous outcomes in how mineral resources are extracted and pollution reduces within the communities that are existing or perform mineral resource extraction. So we are quite concerned that aspects around research and development is not experiencing a positive average growth rate in the medium term. In looking at the budget of the entities itself, we note quite distinctly that there are unqualified opinions with no findings for a number of these institutions, and we find that there are some that have unqualified opinions with findings. Might not be a problem, perhaps when the department interacts with the portfolio committee. Perhaps the portfolio committee itself can look into these issues. But we would like to see an instance in which unqualified opinions with findings is greatly reduced across these entities, especially when you look at 2014 and 2015. You see that three of these have unqualified opinions with findings, but only two of these have no findings. And these audit outcomes are quite vital to ensuring that resources are not wasted or leaked with an to ensure efficiency of allocation of resources. So what are the concluding remarks that we have based on the departmental analysis? Once again, we have just provided a snapshot, an overview of this. The first point we note is that the Department of Mineral Resources has a critical role to play in terms of its oversight functions in South African economy. As Commissioner Kumalo has pointed out, the long-term viability of the mineral resources, of South Africa's mineral resources and the mining sector itself, is dependent on finding innovative ways to combat the global headwinds that we face, one, and two, ensuring greater participation by people or communities in mineral extraction and the benefits of mineral resources itself that are located within their communities. And in this respect, we highlight two issues, the issue of the value chains, as Commissioner Kumalo has pointed out, and the issue of value chains is more important for your small-scale mining. Not subsistence mining, by the way, small-scale mining, which is seen as a potential engine of growth that can be unlocked to benefit a large chunk of South Africa's population, especially those that are in semi-rural or rural areas where much of these mineral resources are located. Secondly, we know that in an era of fiscal constraint, the Department of Mineral Resources and its entities, we need to have a more prudent approach to the management of existing capacity and resources. We note over the past 2 years, 2015 and 2016, a critical aspect is that the Department of Mineral Resources has always, from what we gather, had issues around capacity, especially around inspectors and especially around mineral economists. And this can impact significantly given what the role of the department is envisaged to be. As the chairperson has pointed out, the Lilly Mine disaster is quite an eye-opener of the need to perform thorough inspections to learn the lessons from such events and to be more proactive to prevent such events occurring, not only in terms of physical events like the shifting of mines, of ground falls and so on, but also in terms of the long-term health prospects of communities where mining activities pose an environmental risk to the populations that reside there. We also note that perhaps one of the major ways through which that can be addressed, the issue of capacity, is the need for the department to become more engaged in influencing the outcomes of development training within its sector, education training agencies. We note especially your mining qualifications authority in that regard. While there's a problem of capacity, which cuts across all three spheres of government, we perhaps need to be much more innovative in how we influence these capacity shortages and how we ensure that these are addressed in the long term. And I think the state-owned, the state entities that build training and skills development perhaps present an avenue through which the department, which contributes quite a large chunk of money to this institution, can influence how the outcomes can be in addressing these capacity initiatives. With that, thank you, Chair. Our presentation will end. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Excellent Africans partner. Vietnam Africans the Prat, so I'll do you a favor. I'll save you from the embarrassment of language deficiency and use what you'll be comfortable with. I'm just joking. Okay, honorable members, you tried. You must take some of my members for training so that they can learn to maintain time. But let me try and see whether they will prove me wrong and keep their time.
with very valuable. Honorable members, any questions of clarity? Honorable Schmidt, was your hand up there? Honorable beginning? No. There's only one thing that I know. You raise your hand, not yourself. So the fact that you're standing doesn't mean you are raising. You want to speak. Okay. Others are still consulting. It depends whether they consult heaven or they consult their ancestors. Either way. Honorable Schmidt?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. It provides some insight as to where I think at least the FSC is thinking we're going. With a little knowledge, seem to agree with the fact that there's a structural adjustment by the economy. It's not a cyclical adjustment, it's structural. And it's because, as I understand it, you know, I mean, the Chinese economy is also undergoing a structural adjustment. And for that reason, the demand on commodities is therefore lower. And I saw a few, I think, of 80% of our exports was based on commodity exports was based on Chinese demand. So it has a long-term, or at least a medium-term, structural adjustment requirement from South Africa. This is what is required. But how to address it is a question, and that's where the problem lies. And, you know, I find some hope or guidance, or whatever you would like to, you know, call it, if you compare to the UK position in the 1950s, 1960s, when all those gold mines were closed down, it created a lot of poverty for a short term, or if not a medium term. But the consequence of it was a structural change in the economy to a service provided higher level economy. So sometimes you need to endure pain to grow. You need to endure pain on the short term, possibly immediate term, to grow on the longer term or to benefit in the long term. That's what I learned from it. Now, how you adjust is a question. I think, and that's the bottom line, is you've touched it. Investment is the backbone of the mining industry. So this is where you should start. That is where you start. And how do you stimulate and keep on stimulating the mining economy for as long as you haven't made the transition to what's called a higher order economic development model? And unfortunately, investment is where it begins and unfortunately where it stops. So all these issues about regulatory certainty, which you approach today, is of importance. And it's how you approach it. It's how you approach it. If you're going to approach it by saying 51% model like in Zimbabwe is going to be the answer, well, that's where you and I differ in opinion. Because that's not going to work. It hasn't worked. It won't work. No market economy will, whether you like it or not, will link to the international economy. Whether you like it or not. International economy does not endure a 51% model, where an international investor comes and invests 100% of his capital and it gives control of that business. It doesn't work that way. It does. So it's, and I don't see, maybe I've haven't been listening carefully enough, but I don't see what exactly took research and development, increase in research and development input or cost or whatever, budget allocation. But more is required. I don't see the guidance. I don't know whether you're supposed to give guidance, but I don't see what you think the South African economy on a macro scale should be doing. Maybe I lost it. Maybe it didn't come across. I don't know. So that's what my question is. What do you, in addition to research and development initiatives, you know, one thing that missed me is you made mention of the gold mine industry, which is now dwindled due to availability, but can be turned around by virtue of technological development. But there's a major, and you can look at what Anglo American did. You can see, I'm interested in three products, three commodities: diamonds, platinum, and I think it's, what is the third one? I can't remember. There's a third one, but copper, here we go. Diamonds, despite the market being what it is, platinum, despite the market, so it foresees a massive development of platinum. Should we be focusing on the development of platinum? Chamber of Mines, as I understand, is running a fuel cell technology, platinum fuel cell technology, driving its own electricity demand. We don't even mention that. Shouldn't we be focusing on what some form of garden by the mining companies are saying our next era in mining should be in platinum, and therefore we should be looking at developing that kind of stream of technological development. And that kind of guidance I would like you to give. Maybe it's not your role, but then we need to find it somewhere else. Thank you, Mr.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. Don't abdicate your responsibility of policy formulation and ideological shape-up to somebody else. But if they are gullible enough, they can. Except to say, remember, we still have got the outstanding matter of our input on the or contribution on how can we mitigate these job losses. Probably those questions may also. But I don't defend anyone, but I would be careful for them to find themselves entangled into another discussion. But I can explain. Their mandate was quite simple. They must give us an analysis of the department's performance, particularly in terms of alignment of the strategic performance and their strategy plan. Now, in overall, then they are giving us the economic environment and the challenges. Just generally, what is the reality? And then I'm sure the answer will come and say, we gave you what is the reality. You should then be able to say, how do you shape the way forward in the industry? But as I say, they are here. They are not ancestors. They can speak for themselves. I won't do that. Honorable beginning.
Well, thank you very much. Chair, you see, it really will always come back to these matters of beneficiation. As we are still dealing, we are able to dig and come with our materials, and they were not unable to make sure that we localize them and initiate and then create jobs around that. But then we're creating this kind of problem that we're facing. Because whatever the raw material we have to transport them to these countries and all of that. And that's the challenge. The second part, which I really wish to raise, is an issue that we always cry about, the issue of research and development. When we went around visiting the incentives, I think this assessment is correct to say that we were not really investing in terms of material use, rather being laboratory to make so proper research and all of that. When we were around to see science and all of that, we'll find out the capacity of those. If you're going to do a research, it will take months instead of taking a week. It's a question of the capacity of whatever that has been used there. So that is really been needed. It's a crisis, first and foremost. Second to that, the other matter, which I think is important. We always, when we came with this committee, were crying around issue of inspectors. I think until to date, we depend really on a desktop of a desktop arrangement. Because they are not enough that they can go around and make sure that they're able to make proper visit at the proper time and follow up their kind of program that they're having as inspectors. So that's why we find out now there's an issue of a safety and security hazard in his mind. It's because of that. He really is that, you know, if you visit one area in January and then you come back again in next January, you think that there will be improvement. There will be not. So what you are saying, this document, is a reality of what is taking place in these particular areas. The other matter, which I think is very critical, are issues of, I'm saying research development investment is underreal, it's underutilized, it's not really performing to its best in order to be able to produce people that will take us forward to say, in 20 years' time, where are we going to? We do believe that there is a lot of mining that has to take place in South Africa, but we don't exploit that. The last part, in particular on this issue of research and development, which I want to hammer much on it, that I know that we are failing as the department on, the issue of making sure that we're able to go and examine each and every province, what kind of product, what kind of, how can we make sure that we mine more? Where can we go? We just hear about the issues of shale gas that we're busy with now. And I think it's important that we go around and do that. Because when you go to Africa, African states, Botswana and all of that, the same geoscience was there a long time ago. And we're able now, that area to able to have some kind of mining that is taking place through the geoscience who are coming from South Africa and helping them in that particular area in Botswana. Now I'm trying that we are underutilizing them to make sure. I think we need each province to see what we have, what we are rich on in terms of mineral in all these particular areas. I think if we can do that, it will assist us and it will survive. The issue of South African regulators, I noticed that it's really been underfunded. It is quite some time. Now we expect them to perform more and able to guide wherever they can in terms of regulation, but we don't really assist them in terms of to complement them in terms of finances. I think it's a crisis. I wanted to raise those issues, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for the. I think let me just in response to Honorable Smith, the issue of the need for the economy to undergo a structural adjustment, there's a lot of things that need to be in place. And I think when we talk about research and development, it's just the one aspect. But now, given the kind of world that we're living in, it's a knowledge-based economy. And obviously, in order to be able to move forward and take advantage of that knowledge-based economy, we have a lot of work to do with respect to our education and capacity of the workforce. So the outcomes in education are not looking very good. And then which basically means that in terms of the skills that you have, that you're generating, are you generating skills that are meant to feed today's economy and economic activity in South Africa, or are you generating skills that are able to take advantage of the knowledge economy? And therefore, research and development is an aspect that the broader knowledge economy also provides those opportunities, including on how to transform the current economic activities in the country. So it's a broad set of issues, and I think it might be useful if we can share with you the submission that we made to the finance Standing Committee on Finance on what are some of the issues that we need to do going forward in order that the economy can be able to respond more robustly to these kinds of changes that the global economy has suddenly imposed on it. So I think in terms of the issue around the investment being a it's about how do you attract and retain investment in the mining sector. Now, I did mention some of the key points that you might actually want to be engaging with the department on in terms of how are we dealing with. I mean, we had a conversation with the Labor Portfolio Committee, I think, early last week. And some of the issues that we raised with them was around, how do we deal with the whole labor related issues or challenges, because there's a lot of people that have different views. When you talk investment in South Africa, some people talk about labor laws that are restrictive and or that allow for this type of behavior by unions. Some people say, no, it's just regulation. How do you regulate those laws? Because there's nothing wrong with the laws and all of this. So those conversations are conversations that are real, that do have, whether we like it or not, they do have an impact on the decision-making of a potential investor in the mining sector. It's not the only decision measure, but it does fall into that area. So it's important that those conversations, when you meet with the department, you can actually raise those and just look at what are the key obstacles relating to the legislative regulatory environment in the South African mining sector, and what are the initiatives that the department is actually looking at. And one of the issues that we raised was that there's a need to be able to coordinate the activities. So it's no point trying to deal with the investment. One of the areas that we found to be moving very slowly was with respect to business-related visas. That's something to do with the Department of Labor. We're not actually meeting the kind of targets that were required. So there's a lot of things that have to happen. That intergovernmental coordination around the key outcomes that are, from where we see it as the Commission, would be a natural expectation that for this outcome, because the way in which government is structured in terms of its delivery model is outcomes-based. And therefore, whoever is doing what that relates to a particular outcome, there is a relationship. And there has to be a conversation in terms of what you are doing so that you don't contradict or duplicate what is actually happening in the one area. So those types of things sometimes find themselves in the public space, and they do create certain confusion that will have an impact in terms of certainty when it comes to investors deciding on what they want to do. So I think it's important that those questions are raised and confronted in a very direct manner. I think the other questions that you asked on the guidance, I can only refer you to the broader submission that we made for the financial year when we talked about the three scenarios and what we will need to do, and I think that's where the broad answer would lie. The specifics, I wouldn't like to get into that, because it's probably not directly in a mandate to tell you what must happen in the mining sector, except in a situation where, as an organ of state, you actually write directly and say, we would like the Commission to look at these specific issues and give us guidance. So now we must deal with them. That's a different kind of mandate that we'll have gotten from you in terms of the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act. You know, Honorable Pickering, I think what you have raised are comments, and I want to agree with you. And I think in particular this issue of inspectors, because you see what happens is that these things are very direct and they have direct impact on communities. And if we're not dedicating sufficient resources to those types of things, definitely there are certain, because the unfortunate part is that in general the victims of these types of accidents or mishaps that happen as a result of laxity in certain areas in terms of compliance, the victims generally tend to be the marginalized and vulnerable communities. And it's a simple fact, as simple as that. And one does not want to perpetrate that type of an issue by. We know that there's this issue that we are living with, which is the issue of budget constraints. And it becomes quite important in making the decisions, where exactly do you want to put your priorities on? Because it's about allocative efficiency. Are you allocating the resources that you have to the areas which will have the most impact in terms of their impact on society and what society feels? Because some things might seem, on the face value, they might seem to be very soft, So when you have a budget constraint, you say, no, this one, because we can actually do it from the office, so we'll send forms and get people to check in. So let's not waste resources by going to visit each mine to check whether what they say they have is actually there. And so it's very easy to cut, because there's a fairly decent reason to justify from a financial point of view. But when things actually then happen, that people check in boxes, a lot of things can go wrong. And I think that's my comment.
Okay, unfortunately, we still have got three presentations to be made. Next time, when there's spare time, and our dear honorable guest may have also been having the enjoyment of being here and extend their stay, we will still give you the opportunity. In case they didn't do that, you can put it down, that question, and bring it to me. I'll answer it. If it is difficult, I'll refer it to them. I'm making it so that you've got a shorter response. On that note, thanks very much, Babu Kuma. I'll tell you one thing, not today. Yeah. There's only one person who appreciate you being here. Yeah. Okay, Dr. Omar. Thanks very much. You helped us. Even with your standing in. The only thing I don't like about you is that next time when you are given power, don't return it back. Never return it. Just tell the person, no, don't worry, they are comfortable. Even if you didn't come, they said, I'm okay alone. next time you will not be given. But it's okay. Thanks very much. You helped us. And we hope we will continue to interact. But I must confirm, no, we need that information. There can be no finance in this country if we are not selling commodities, and we are the best when it comes to selling commodities, and that's why finance will be in crisis, because one of the best contributing industries is in a state of so they can look at that thing. The only people who can action what they have looked at is here, not in a negative way, in a positive way. So we contribute a lot in the GDP. So we need that information that you supplied to, so that also, I think one of the members, it will also assist probably when we go through that process of contributing to the issue of job losses and so forth. I think it will be quite mindful. I can say on behalf of the committee, even though they did not respond to you, no, we need it. We don't need it only to look at what is the department is doing or is supposed to go through. We are looking beyond for other purposes that we think it can assist the committee. I was going to say that few things, not even a serious one. That is the last matter. I don't think people... Now, you can assure everyone, including those investors, at least when we started the meeting, you were here. I don't know whether it's because of Honorable Lorena and Schmidt, but that issue of nationalization was there when many were still outside. So since they've come in the committee, I don't remember here even that word. Let alone that the people just decided to disappear, maybe it's because they were sitting next to free marketers and they realized that they don't have a chance to even mention the word. So you heard that some people, it's more than a year now that they've been in this committee, but that's why they were talking about nationalization. So investors must relax. I'm sure we can say that with confidence. We do what we are supposed to do in the best interest of the country. Okay, on that score, can we go to DPME? I want to talk about, you will introduce yourself. Now that's when you talk about a man who knows power. Doesn't need the second hand, he's doing it alone. Aluliak. So introduce yourself, sir. Unfortunately, I'm looking at your slide, I'm sure you are used in summarizing. Because we still have another last presentation after you. So we don't want to invite people and then put them under. But I'm sure you will go through the key issues. You'll go through the key issues that are required for the benefit of the community. And then again, we will continue in the similar exercise where the members of the committee will be able to see those questions of clarity. I know they like Bioscope, but even in the absence of a Bioscope, at least they do have copies in front of them. So, what? You don't have a copy? Honorable, I can see Honorable Lorima, you don't, and Honorable Schmidt. Honorable Matala, you are here. Very early. Why you don't have it? That's been abusive. Okay, let me give it to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson Lizipo. And Honorable Members, my name is Rudy Dix. I work for the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. I am currently the Deputy Director General responsible for Outcome 4, which is the Inclusive Economy, and Outcome 6, which is the Infrastructure section. Chairperson, I must just apologize on behalf of the Director General who could not unfortunately make it and has requested me to attend. So as you said, you've given me the power, you know, and I'm here on my own, Commissioner. Honorable Chairperson, I'll just a few slides and we'll go through them and talk specifically in relation to the MTSF targets that have been specifically assigned to the Department of Mineral Resources. I want to echo Commissioner Kumalo's sentiments around the state of the mining sector. It is in a very dire state. I have a few indicators just to provide exactly how it is at the end of December. This has gone worse, of course, particularly on the job loss numbers. There are a few interventions that I think, Honourable Member, that we have some idea of what we think could possibly be initiatives that have emerged out of. Honorable Chair, you recall you attended the mining Pakisa, and there's been some useful ideas that we think could in some sense turn around the economic world, at least of mining, and it related, both upstream and downstream sectors. So just quickly in context, Honorable Members, remember that, there's a lot of questions always asked about what happened to the NDP. The NDP is enshrined in the medium-term strategic framework. And the MTSF is just the first five-year building blocks of the NDP. It reflects the commitments of the election manifesto of the governing party, including the NDP, including its through a program of radical economic transformation. This is the first MTSF, of course, following adoption of the NDP in September 2012. And the introduction of a long-term plan is pertinent to our system of developing coherence, Honorable Members, towards achieving the vision and goals of the country's long-term plan. So it's quite important that, what the NDP does and what MTSF strives to do through actual implementation of the NDP is in a sense try to ensure that we develop policy coherence, alignment and coordination across government, and as well alignment across budget. So we're working on that, and I think there's been significant improvement to ensure that when we look at budget allocations, they are consistent with the priorities that we've done we've defined within specific, within the parameters of the NDP and the, and of course the medium term strategic framework, honorable members. So this, this particular report has, requested honorable chairperson is a report that views the overall progress of the Department of Mineral Resources in relation to outcome 4, outcome 6 and outcome 10. And I've consolidated that in a few slides. As you can see, I've just summarized below, honorable members, what those 14 outcomes are to remind you of them. Outcome 4, is employment through inclusive growth. There are particular targets that have been set there for the DMR. Outcome 6, an efficient, competitive and responsive economic infrastructure network. Also specific targets set there that are reported on against for DMR. And of course, outcome 10, which is the environment, protect and enhance our environment, assets and natural resources. So it's specifically related to those areas, honorable members. Chairperson, I must also say this is for the reporting period of the three quarters of 2015-2016. So we've just in actual fact completed our report for to cabinet committee last week on quarter three. So of course quarter four for 2015-2016 has not been completed yet. Although I think I've highlighted some of the key areas so that the members of the committee have a sense of what's happening and the important challenges, given that they are unfolding on a weekly basis, the challenges that are there. In relation to outcome four, honorable chair, there are a few areas over here that have been identified. The first action review of the mining sector strategy was objective to increase mining exploration, investment, production, and ensure sustainability and transformation of the economy. The particular indicator is development of a mining beneficiation action plan also, right? Through a revised strategy. Now what we've done is slightly taken a different approach in partnership with the Department of Mineral Resources, DTI, EDD. And if honorable members remember, during the course of the solar address by the state president last year, he had announced that the mining sector will embark on a mining pakisa. This mining pakisa was held in October and November, between the 20th of October to the end of November, 5 weeks, about 140 people in the room. And one of these interventions of the mining of pakisa was to develop a set of initiatives. Mining pakisa has developed 16 key initiatives. Honorable Chair, if you indulge me, I didn't put it on here because it would be quite a long set of initiatives. So I thought I'll just talk through them, honorable members, so that you can get a sense of what were the critical and strategic issues that we were trying to. There's a lot of the questions that have been asked, and by Commissioner Kumalo has been trying to respond to that. We thought that it would take at addressing some of the structural challenges immediate, to some of the structural challenges, which is immediate to long-term, and where do you want to see mine in the future? Because certainly there's quite a bit of challenge. Let me just explain, honorable chairperson. Gold is at a cliff. You know? So gold mining, those lovely gold mining resources that we mined for 100 years, is that those easy seams have come to complete end. In actual fact, research that has been conducted and presented during the mining pakisa suggests that we literally reach the end of the kind of gold mining that we've done in 400 years by 2022. That's just around the corner. You know? And for us to be able to mine the one-third of gold reserves that is still left in our geology will require very sophisticated kind of mining. You know, you would have to mine at no less than 4 kilometers below the ground, and that's impossible for any human activity to take place. So you're looking at the mining sector, particularly in gold, for instance, that is going to have to require investment in significant forms of technology for us to be able to ensure the gold sector survives for another 15 years. Or gold ends literally in 2022. This is the kind of research that we're looking at, honorable members. So of course, this is something that has been discussed around the structural nature. Platinum is a different case, of course. In Southern Africa, we own about 93% of the platinum reserves. In South Africa, 89%. You know, there are significant forms of research to try and get the motor industries to shut away from using palladium in catalytic converters. That has significant impact on platinum sector. And so those mineable reserves that we have, if we don't mine them, if we don't find a market for them, then I think we have a chance. And I think this is one of the things that, honorable member, you've indicated, fuel cell technology and platinum that goes into fuel cell technology is an alternative to try and ensure that if the research, which is 10 years away, or developing alternatives to catalytic converters where a larger part of it is platinum, that we have a market. Fuel cells is one of the cleanest forms of technology, energy efficient. You use the example of the Chamber of Mines, but it's the size of a, if the honourable members bypass there, you can see it's standing right beside. It's the size of a Volkswagen Combi, right? And it takes 42 ounces of platinum, and it produces 100 kilowatts of electricity. By the way, so 100 kilowatts is enough to run that entire building. It has 7 floors, and during the night, it has an agreement with the city of Johannesburg to put back the excess energy into. And one of the challenges of developing a fuel cell technology, and we had the discussion with the Pakisa, is that it requires gas done. So you use another form of clean energy to produce another form of clean energy. So gas networks are critical, and we don't have a substantial gas network other than in the city of Johannesburg and parts of Pretoria. And this is quite important. So you need a gas to drive it. So gas is pumped in, drawn through the fuel, through the cell. It produces a bit of water, and it turns out the energy to be able to do that. So this is something that requires for us to be able to look at. Honorable Chair, so we've done this lab initiatives. I just speak a little bit about some of the other initiatives, and I can put it on just here. The second one is leveraging the state's right to set conditions for the 21.4% of Kumba's iron ore output. The indicator, of course, is setting those conditions. The target for 2015 is granting of the right work conditions. And this process is underway. There's a bit of lag on here, and honorable members will see that. The third action under the MCSF is undertake a nationwide assessment of uranium and thorium resources in South Africa. That is the indicator that is being developed. The target here is just to develop tip-top studies with initial site investigation, including the sampling of radiometric surveys. And these studies have been completed. So we're moving into the next phase of how we then test the usefulness in ensuring that we can exploit this kind of resource. The last MTSF target under item 4 is determine viable shale gas reserves, ensure development and implementation of exploratory drilling plan, appropriate legislation developed, and ensure implementation of shale exploration program. The indicator here is exploration rights issued, and is of course annual progress reports on shale gas. Target is exploration rights granted in areas with potential of shale gas reserves. Processing of applications in progress, as I understand, some of those, four rights have been issued for exploration, but under a particular study that's currently happening through the shale gas strategic environmental assessment process, it's an interdepartmental process that is currently underway. The process of applications, environmental assessment is ongoing, exploration activities will commence pending the grant of exploration rights. Awareness campaigns is going on through community and business roadshows, and there are significant challenges because there is quite a strong lobby group in the Karoo who are going to oppose the exploration of shale gas, and this is something that we've highlighted with DMR, that we need to develop mechanisms to mitigate that kind of risk if we think that shale gas is an important area, Honourable Chairperson, for us. So under the first one, Honourable Chair, so with the completion of mining Pakisa in 2015, these post-lab consultations, there are 16 initiatives. First of them ranking in immediate interventions around job losses, for instance, to some of the more structural issues around gold, community, transformation in the sector, fairly significant, honorable Chair, and I know that time doesn't permit because I can spend another 5-10 minutes talking through those initiatives, but perhaps it would be useful in another session, Honorable Chair, that we talk through those initiatives in a great amount of detail and engage on what the Pakisa proposals are that are going to be consulted with different stakeholders. Honorable Chair, I've heard that you're going to talk about the job losses, but so one of the discussions during the Pakisa, it fell smack dead in the commodity decline. you know, and you know, so we've seen worsening situation in the mining sector. But if you recall, in October, it's when price of gold and platinum, for example, fell below $800 an ounce, and that was quite significant. There hasn't been significant recovery, and a lot of the sectors, both in platinum and gold, are loss making. So more than 80% of SA platinum mining industry and 31% of the gold mining industry were loss making by the end of December. So this was the gold price has recovered slightly, right? And so you see a bit of investment. Going back in there, you'd see some of the initiatives to be able to turn that around. Platinum is quite significant given that we own this resource. You know, we have a global monopoly on this. And even the most profitable mine, which I understand is used to be in the Anglo-American Sable, but the Pelé mine, it's a totally mechanized mine, is even in the loss making. It has 1,300 employees turning out the same amount of tonnage of a mine that employs 7,500 people. You know, so even that mine, which is highly mechanized, is even at a loss making, and this is quite significant. The bulk sectors such as coal, iron, and manganese have on average 50% of its operations at peak even to loss making. Between April and December, the downturn has led to over 20,000 retention applications. As of today, honourable members, that number is almost doubled. There are now 36,000 applications for 189 with the CCMA. And the potential is that this is a high risk. It is likely that those workers will continue to lose their jobs, including a high number of workers in the Sishen Iron Ore Mine, 4,000, that have a significant effect on Northern Cape communities if 4,000 workers are going to be retrenched. So you have doubling in less than 2 months of the number of workers that are affected by the possibility of retrenchments. There are numerous large-scale dumping processes also facilities that are closed, in the state of crisis as a result of uninvestment and sharp increases in energy prices. High Everest is one example of that. You know, where 1,700 workers have lost their jobs. There have been numerous interventions to try and save that particular iron ore plant, you know, one of the oldest operating plants. Iron ore has taken a significant knock, and partly because there's a number of factors, but largely when we're just unable to compete internationally. Strangely so, I must say also, just given if you look at commodity prices and you look at cost of competing, Australians are doing even better than the Chinese, producing much lower iron ore for the Chinese market than what the Chinese are doing themselves. And that's partly because of the kind of model that they've developed, which I don't think is appropriate for the South African market, and it has a high risk factor. Our immediate intervention is to ensure that we fast track measures to avoid or reduce job losses. And this is a significant scale-up of through the significant scale-up of the training layoff schemes, which is the training in TLS. And we need to ensure that allocation of money that we're trying to discuss through the Department of Labor and the UIF is utilized to ensure that it's not a minimalist approach, and introduce company-specific distress support interventions through the IDC. So a combination of the training layoff scheme and distress sector interventions, honorable chair, to be able to ensure that at a country level, to be able to ensure good success. I want to echo the sentiments of the commissioning also that finalization of the import DA is critical step to course creating a stable and policy certain environment in the mining sector. And of course, in one of the discussions during the Batista is that industry was quite clear that this will provide significant growth, transformation, investment, employment creation, not only in mining and related value chains. Chairperson, if I may just add, I mean, investment in mining starts off with having a significant share of the exploration budget of global mining. And this is where we've failed in the last 10 to 15 years. We, in fact, used to be one of the largest contributors towards exploration during the 70s and the 80s. We have 5% of the global exploration budget. Today, honorable members, we own less than 1% of it. So investment only happens when you have chaps who are prepared to invest in exploration and take the risk. And that's the critical thing, getting our exploration budget and allocations. Combination of that requires us to have funding, but also good geoscience data. And so I think one of the important things is that they also came out of the Pakira, is that we need to develop new systems that can accurately track and find significant themes of all bodies that can be mined. We still operate on an old system. Botswana, for example, Zambia, Malawi have introduced new systems, but they have to have a system of ensuring that we're able to do that. But investment starts with exploration, and we need to get our exploration budget up. There is some progress towards leveraging the state right, set on the Kumba deal. So it's slow the progress, and we've raised with the DMR and the DGI, who's part of this thing. There's also a detailed report provided in the third quarter, and that provided challenge given the alarming threat of around 4,000 jobs cut to the decision iron ore, as I've missed on the the desktop studies have been completed for the uranium and thorium, so that is on track. In relation to shale gas, in the first quarter, the department reported on the following this year. So regulations on the petroleum exploration and production has been developed and published. So that's quite significant, and it moves in the right way. Strategic environment assessments are in progress. Awareness, processing of the applications has been reported and is in progress. Although in this year, some of them have been issued. Awareness campaign is ongoing through community roadshows. There's also, I must say, the establishment of the strategic environmental assessment process has made significant progress. And I've just been advised by the chair that they are going to release the first chapter of the assessment in the next week or so, as I understand, in the process of quality assuring that. And so, of course, we get a good sense of, what is the reserve in the, is it correct that the 400 trillion cubic feet potential gas reserve is there? What is the kind of initial the environmental impact? What is the constraint it will have on water? I think those are important questions that everybody has been asking, given the kind of challenges that this has, but also an ability of increasing our energy supply that is quite needed. So that first report hopefully will deal with those specific issues that have been on many people's outcome 6. So those are the assessments that we've made for outcome 4. On outcome 6, it's just two particular outcomes: formal structure to foster collaboration between government, ESCOM, Transnet, SASL, IPP, and the coal industry to optimize domestic coal use while maximizing coal exports, to address fragmentation in the coal industry, and to plan optimal utilization for specific coal roads, coal fields, draw on the coal roadmap. So the process here is to establish a formal structure. This is the indicator, and the target has been December 2014. This has not been met. There's been some informal arrangement and some structure that has been set up but not formalized, and they've started to talk about how best to coordinate the implementation of the coal roadmap in a way that allows us to use that strategic reserves to the best of our ability, so we maximize both cost but also the potential to be able to ensure that we feed into good quality coal for ESCOM to drive existing and of course the new power stations. Develop a national coal policy with regulations that will include strategy to secure coal supply. The indicators that cabinet would have to approve this policy, and this is for this year, July 2016. DMR has led on this one, honorable members. What has happened is that they've set up a stakeholder process to discuss development of a coal policy. If that is where it is, then, in our view, it's unlikely that they will meet the 2016, given that you'd have to have a significant amount of consultation, you'd have to have a significant amount of discussion with SOEs and other institutions of the state, let alone public and other bodies before it goes cabinet. So we think that there's a bit of time, but we don't think they will meet the July 2016 for cabinet to take a decision to implement the coal supply settlement. And I just made those particular comments in those sections of the assessment in relation to that. For outcome 10, honorable members, there are again two areas over here. Implement environmental regulations to mitigate negative environmental impacts in exploitation of mineral resources. And there are two specific indicators that I commented on. The first was the number of derelict and ownerless mine sites rehabilitated. Now, The MTS have filed for 2015-16 put 50. Over the MTS period is 250. Cumulatively, DMR has rehabilitated 43 sites in various provinces in this country. So they have quite a, you know, on target, on progress. The second indicator is the number of mines monitored for non-compliance in accordance with water license conditions. As you have called, the honourable members, this has been a quite challenge for the sector, partly because of the large backlogs in the Department of Water and Sanitation issuing those licenses. Cumulatively, DWS has monitored 62 mines this financial year, with the support of course, the Department of Mineral Resources. The second action is integration of ecological infrastructure considerations into land use planning and decision-making about new developments. So it's really about environmental impact assessments here, which is the NCATA, that reports within the National Environmental Assessment System, and a target of 98% of that. None has been done. None has been reported within the NIR system. DMS has not started reporting on it. So this is a concern that we want to know. Because this is quite important, given the challenges that we have. I've taken it by indicating this part. I think there are two separate challenges over here instead of putting it together in the action. The first is that, I mean, I think DMR has made good progress in relation to the target of 50. Rehabilitation sites of derelict and owners' mines. Site-specific information has also been made available to the outcome. So that's really important. But despite progress of 43 rehabilitated sites, targeted for 2015-16 of 50, it's estimated that there were 6,000 derelict and owners' mines. So now we think that you said that the department has a relatively low target. And this has come to bite us, honorable members, partly because of the high risk of AMD. That if we do not specifically intervene and escalate the kind of interventions on derelict and owners' mines, I think we will continue to face a significant problem. So while on the target they're making good progress, we think that it's too low to be able to ensure they do make a significant impact on addressing the estimated number of derelict and owners' mines. The 6,000 number comes from the research that has been done as part of the background for the mining PAKISA, honorable members. The same for the water licenses. Again, there's been significant progress with EWS in monitoring of mines for non-compliance with water licenses and cooperation. Again, despite poor progress, results non-compliance. However, GWS is the process of fast-tracking backlogs and existing applications. The easy challenge of proper coordination and working together between DMR and DWS in getting rid of that backlog. We understand that the Department of Water and Sanitation has put in a backlog team, and they've worked quite significantly in getting rid of a huge backlog. I don't want to say a figure. Unfortunately, I don't have a figure. We were trying to confirm the exact amount of fee of backlogs that there are on water licenses, but it's quite huge and significant, and runs into thousands. Better coordination between DMR and DWS on implementing this and ensuring that compliance for water licenses is maintained. I mean, there are many sites that we visited, for example, as Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, where we've actually big mines that we know of that, you know, have no water license, but they're operating. So this is obviously a huge risk and requires for us to be able to address that in a proper way. On the NIR system and the EIAs, compliance in this is a challenge, and we do raise this as a concern. The sector is unable to determine the efficiency of the department in carrying out legislative mandate, and this is a major concern. That, you know, if there's an agreement to comply with, you know, EIAs within the NIR system, it's important that DMR ensure that does happen, and that has not been the case, honourable members. But just the last two slides, honourable chair. Some of the conclusion and recommendations, again, emphasize the conclusion of the NPRD is going to be important for us to create policy certainty and a stable environment in the mine sector. Despite the mining PAKISA that has quite a significant number of initiatives, the immediate steps right now, honorable members, is for us to address the crisis in the mining sector. And you have identified that as a key item for your agenda for today, that deals with training layoff schemes, for example, and the risk company interventions. The likelihood of not being able to develop a policy for cabinet to endorse in July 2016 is another concern. Coal is an important part of our energy mix and accounts for 93% of electricity. An appropriate coal policy must guide it, you know, given our ongoing investments in coal-driven power stations, fire stations. Despite excellent progress on the rehabilitation, we think that there's a probable review of the target that is required. We're going to enter into discussion with the DMR on revising that target. 50 is significantly low, given the number of terrorists and unless mines and the kind of environmental challenges that are there right now. We recommend that there's immediate corrective action. Again, we are engaging with the DMR, ensuring that they do report on the EIA within the NIA system. And ensure that we work on better cooperation at the operational level between GWS and DMR on the non-compliance of water licenses. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Ruthie. It's like one is sitting in a lecture room, learning more and more and more. I'm sure you will be comfortable. I can see it's not the last time we're seeing your race. That issue of Pakistan mining is still outstanding, and I think it's now confirming also the agency. It says that when we asked for it, we were told that is being handled by the presidency through the DPMB office. Now, because you are here, on behalf of your conscience, I do confirm that we will put the date forward to you on when we request you to assist the committee with a presentation specifically on mining parties. Otherwise, me and you and the committee will agree you are coming back. The only thing we'll just facilitate with you the date, which we can see with that it's a matter of extreme urgency. I just thought I must deal with that issue first, so that you are free. You don't feel that you have not done justice. We feel that that's a presentation on its own that will require yourself. I think I can also safely say that on the issue of the MPRDA amendment bill, the progress is underway, and when we outline the possible program of the committee, which I'm sure honorable members who are so active will know what they came to Parliament to do, will agree with us that we will have to work beyond the normal commitment that we have. We've got very committed members of the committee, but that they will require to now draw from the reserves, because it's one issue that will be seized with, as it has been already referred through what is required, the National House of Traditional Leaders, and as soon as it happens, it's going to be in the head of this committee to deal and tackle it. So we can certainly say there's progress now, and we will see, if we can carry with both heads, all of them, others will keep going forward using our feet, but we are all compelled to have a movement forward, no other way around. And I remember, I'm sure you have received the presentation. Any questions of clarity? Honorable Lorem? Honorable Smith? This time around, if you didn't raise, you will see you are eager to move, so no one is going to try and consult and later on a voice from somewhere give the question, and then you start to say, okay, you do. I know there's no next question. Honorable Lorima?
Chair, and thanks, Mr. Dix, for your very interesting presentation. I'll start off by reinforcing what the chair said about Operation Pakisa. It happened last year. This committee still knows nothing about it. Everything is being kept under wraps. That indicates to me that not much progress was made, which is what I'm hearing, that the government refused to shift from its current positions. So I have to have a little bit downbeat about that. I hope you can bring us some good news. But I really would like to emphasize, Mr. Chair, I think we need to hear from this department as soon as possible what progress, if any, has been achieved and what still needs to be done. Mr. Dix, I think you're in a bit of an unfortunate position because you're dealing with issues that are highly politically charged. You did, however, stray into Highfell Field. It's not just unfortunate circumstances. I mean, it's been made worse by the fact that the IDC didn't provide a loan of 150 million, which was saved to be some of those jobs. Also, the Department of Labor has gone back on a promise to supply money for retraining initiatives. I think both of those are very unfortunate with regard to that case. But as I say, that's a side issue. It's not really what we're talking about here. On environmental stuff, I'm a little concerned that too much of your focus is on derelict and ownerless mines and the damage caused by them, and of course the damage that comes from this. But there's also significant damage that is being caused by operating mines. So I'd just like to know whether you can tell me anything about your focus on that, how you're focusing on that, if you can give us some examples of some cases of these that you've looked at. Water licenses is a very bizarre area where it's very difficult to know how many water licenses have been issued. I'm interested to hear you say that many of them are still outstanding. Because when we've asked written questions to the Department of Water in this parliament, we've got conflicting answers, sometimes in months of each other. One of those answers, I think the last time the question was asked, sometime last year, said that, for example, the Blissa coal mine in Mpumalanga had a water license. Well, this committee went there and were told that, no, they haven't got a water license. On the way, but they haven't got it yet. So I want to know, could you tell a bit more about that? Now, I think that is a big, big problem. And I think there is a possibility that either nobody knows what's going on, or that the situation is much, much worse than we know. I'll stop there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, you know, as Mr. Lorimer said, that the 16 key initiatives need to be indicated as soon as possible. I mean, we've got a problem in the mining industry, we've got a lag in making this known, and the question is why. I mean, no one knows, but I think Mr. Lorimer's indicated there. But can I just say, the responsibility of ensuring on the face of it that the departments are cooperating, coordinating, and whatever else, all the adjectives, as it is maybe, is your department, if I understand correctly. But, you know, the huge mismatch, not only between Department of Water Services and Sanitation and DMR, but many other departments. There's a lag, Department of Labor, for instance. But within the department, and I would like to know how it's possible that when, like, for instance, the previous presentation made by the FSC, that the state administrator would match by which was the state, what's it called, the Diamond Amendment Act of 2007, single-handedly caused the disappearance nearly of this diamond industry, is allocated the biggest budget of the Department of Mineral Resources. How is that possible? When the department itself said we need to revisit the diamond model within this country, all I'm asking is some department needs to sit down and say, listen guys, what your vision and mission is not the overall mission and vision of this country. There may be political motives involved from all sides, but it's not working. This department, your department, I understand, is responsible for saying the current status quo with diamond industry is not working. Either withdrawal, abolish that entity, as we've been calling for since 2007, which the BS have been warning you since 2007, which Anglo has been warning you since 2007, which they removed the head office to Botswana, but no one seems to listen. So the facts of the matter versus the ideology of the matter, there is no synchronization at all by no department because it is politically driven. So hopefully this department will ensure that there is less political ideology and more practical resolution of these problems, if I understand your mandate correctly. But can I just continue to say, you know, One thing which is very ironical, and I hope I'm reading it correctly, but you on an aspect which I don't know a lot, and that's economics. But if it wasn't for the poor exchange rate, we probably have had 80% of all mining companies, if not more, being operating at a loss. But we're not in a position to exploit it. What is it that we have a laggard response in responding to international crisis? I know every country is responding and has got crisis, but it's highly responsive. And the previous presentation also indicated it's sometimes a failure to respond, or failure to respond timely or appropriately. We can respond. It's good to come and say we responded. Have we responded appropriately? Have we responded quickly enough? And I really appreciate the answer by the previous presentator saying we need to upskill our workforce in order to enter the higher order, may call it by lack of a better word, economic differentiation. Because we can never keep on becoming the same industrialized economy. It doesn't work that in the light of growth of economic systems, if I understand it correctly. But, you know, I would like to know what your views on it. Then the exploration budget. There's another example. Canada has an excellent way of ensuring exploration budgets are not only followed but improved. And that's a flow through, what do you call it, flow through share. Well, there's a flow through scheme. So at least, as far as I am, in 2009, this government is in the way of a flow-through scheme. No indication by Treasury, by this department, they support that mechanism or system or scheme. Nothing. We see what Canada is doing. We see what Australia is doing. And we refuse point blank to follow the flow-through scheme, if it's called correctly. Why not? Why under earth reason not? Those are the issues which I fail to see the reality. And the policy implementation are at opposite with each other. We're responding, yes, it's good to respond, but are we responding appropriately? And I think that's the issue. There's one issue I've marked down, Mr. Chair. I feel steel has been dealt with. There's no good thing. We are dealing with the threats to unemployment in the following way. And when the first test comes, the first test single-handedly is failed, man, if I can call it that way, a non-adherence to the Department of Labour's signed undertaking to pay what they call the training layoff scheme. How is that possible? How does this department and this government allow it to happen? I don't know. I honestly don't know. So where do you think the international resources with no link to this country except to make some form of profit and saying, but why should I invest in a country where the government espouses its policies but doesn't follow it? We don't implement what we say. And then we say, why is investment not forthcoming? Why are we, I think, dwindled in investment to the tune of 0.8% or minus 0.8%, if I understand the figures correctly. If there's anything of frustration, Mr.
Chair. Okay. I'm not sure, but again, you will answer.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
I think both Honorable Rory Management, I mean, a lot of you have made comments. And perhaps it's probably more appropriate for the committee to have some of those discussions than for me as an official to respond to some of those things, if you understand what I'm saying. You know? Honorable Lorimer, Pakistan has been successful. It was completed. It's a process now of consultation. This is what is happening right now. So we've been requested, we've been doing presentations to different and various industry unions, environmental groups, different departments, different entities also. And it's why I've said to the chairperson, I'm offering to present to this committee the details of the draft initiative that is there. The draft initiatives, remember the PISA is a presidential initiative, right? So this thing has to be launched by the president as other participants have been done. But I think it's a commitment, Honorable Chair, to share those draft initiatives. There's no reason why we should not share those draft initiatives. Pakistan, recall, Honorable Lorima, the President announced that Pakistan is a collaborative effort. It's not a negotiation. Although there are some aspects of negotiations in there. So the 140 people that came together in the room were industry, were unions, governments, the Honorable Chairperson had attended a few of the days supporting or deliberations, environmental groups, entities of state, CSIR, for example, and had a discussion to address some of the key issues and challenges. First challenge is, how do we deal with the immediate challenges that are existing in the industry? How do we deal with the long-term structural challenges? How do we deal with transformation and ownership in the industry? And how do we ensure we develop better cooperation and partnerships between the state and the private sector in developing a mining sector? And when I refer to a mining sector, I don't specifically refer to narrow mining. I refer to all linkages of mining. Because capital goods are quite important. Capital goods was very important in the in the start of the mining sector up until the late 80s. And so is the downstream sector. These were all vertically integrated, right? And with the dismantling, for example, of Anglo, as an example, that had fallen away. So the kind of mineral energy complex that was there that broke up during the 90s, where that kind of vertical integration we do think is quite critical for growing. An economy, particularly like mining, is quite critical that we develop those kinds of things. So I think that it's important for you to understand that there's a current consultation process right now of presenting the FISA initiatives. This will then go to the president for launch sign-off. Many of those initiatives are already in strategic plans and APPs of different departments and are being implemented. So let me just use a good example. You would have noticed that the launch of the fuel cell cooperation was launched, and that was something that happened a few weeks ago, just immediately after the mining in Daba. For example, there's a particular project around housing in the Tabazimbi area, which has been some discussions with the Department of Housing. Anglo-Gold Ashanti and Northern one more company, sorry, I can't get to the name. But it's one of the first unique examples of a public-private sector partnership on housing development. One of the first initiatives that have started that housing development is to ensure the build of a water treatment plant that has been there but has not worked efficiently. Right? And the private sector has committed to the Tabazimbi municipality to support not only just resources to ensure that they look at building of that Tabazimbi water treatment plant for the next to support the not only the mining sector but the community for 15, 20 years. They've also committed during the Pakisa to deploy engineers in partnership with the municipalities to support the maintenance of that. But their concern was that we can give you the billions of rand, but are you going to be able to maintain it? And so, of course, because of shortage of engineers in municipalities, this is what they've committed through the Pakisa. This is one of the first 14,000 units that are going to be built over the next 5 years in Tabazimbi. So I think these are some of the things that have come up, and I just want to identify that. I thought everything, I think, is a complex thing, and I think we are all interventions. We are all trying to ensure that we deal with interventions, to be able to ensure we deal with the training layer scheme, and that process is still underway, Honorable Lorraine. The water licensing is a complex thing. What has happened is that the Department of Water and Sanitation has set up an intervention team. Now, I'm unable to, and I can commit, Honorable Chair, to get the most up-to-date data. I'm unable to right now to say to you, this is a backlog, or this is the significant interventions that have decreased backlog. Right? I know that they have set up a special intervention team on the backlog of licenses, and that has made some significant progress. The question is whether you deal with the backlog and the existing licenses at the same time, that's the thing, so you don't have a new backlog building all the time. And I think this is the discussion that we're engaging, for example, with the Department of Water and Sanitation to be able to ensure that. I can commit to you, honorable members, from the Department of Planning and Monitoring and Evaluation, we can provide that kind of information. Whether it's the correct information or the same information that was provided to you again, I cannot vouch for that. But we know that there is an intervention team. We're trying to get a sense of the outstanding licenses for mines. We know that there's a bit of conflict and confusion as to who's gotten a license and who hasn't gotten a license. But there is progress that we specifically requested from the DWS to get rid of that particular panel. On the Smith, I'm not going to comment on the diamond trader. I think that's a particular area that I think that the state and the ruling party has taken a decision on and has been implemented, that the state is going to participate in the mining sector. and I think this is something that policy dictates. So of course, the role and the extent of participation in the mining sector is something that is constantly being looked at. It's not to say, Honourable Chair, that I think your point that you made earlier on, this is not about nationalisation. It's saying that state is an important contributor to the mining sector in different ways, you know, not only to a regulatory way, but also participating in some activities to be able to ensure that you're able to assist in that regard. Exchange rate has a double whammy for the mining industry. So you have what Mr. Kobale has said, is that the problem with the economic climate is not that it's particularly only on South Africa. It's a global economic problem. And the problem exists in relation to demand for commodity exports. So of course, if you look at most of commodity trading countries, this has had a significant impact. Brazil is a good example. Russia is another good example if you want to do comparative looks at countries that are more or less similar to us. Including those who are petroleum producing countries. So a low oil price has had a significant impact, but for commodity producing countries, this has been more significant. And this is partly because, as you correctly said, there's a structural adjustment in the Chinese economy, you know, where there's a significant shift from commodity dependency. And, you know, they simply want to move up the value chain, right? So they want to move into services, right? And so, of course, there's opportunities that exist, but given that Chinese have eaten a lot of our commodities, there's a low demand. And if you're unable to compete globally, then you have the ability to be able to meet that lower demand that is there right now. So super cycle that was there during 2003 to 2008, you know, whether that will happen, it will happen again, it will never be the case. Perhaps the opportunities in Africa is real, if we're able to beneficiate some of those particular products, or industrialize some of the economy of Africa. But that's the one thing. So it's not simply about that it's cheaper, but it's a lack of demand, global demand that has an impact. And the second component, because we don't have a well-structured and well-developed capital goods sector. So capital goods are quite an important part of mining, as we know that. Now, recent estimates suggest that, for example, with the existing exchange rate, that we import some of the capital goods required for running mines is as high as 30% more than what they can produce locally. If they can produce a little bit. So you have a bit of a whammy of who you depended on globally to import your capital goods for the mining sector. Some of those technologies are not necessarily manufactured or in no real partnerships. Although the Pakistan has tried to do that, to try and look at some of the companies, the local companies like ART, for example, and of course Elon Musk will help us, but we are prepared to invest back into South Africa there. So these are one of the kind of companies that are going to be quite important. But again, if you can get publishers locally to look at capital goods equipment that is required for the mining industry, that is 30% less, then clearly there's an opportunity for local manufacturing and production. And so we're looking at that with the TPI to ensure that we try and look at that opportunities and develop the kind of partnership that is there, you know. And of course, you know that mining companies have used capital goods budgets, right, and these have gone predominantly to the export market. Exploration, I don't think I'll venture to comment on that one, Honorable Smith. I think that's a particular view on that. Safe to say that the Canadians are learning from South Africa, by the way, right, because the Canadians are at the extent of their mining when we were in the 80s. So they're learning on a lot of that and doing a lot of things that are really different. You know, so I think that's good news for us because quite a bit of our discussions and exchanges have been with the Canadian government to government and with Mines to Mines around exchanges of technology, exchanges of IP, and a lot of other opportunities. I hear what you're saying on exploration. The key for us is trying to develop the critical centers, support package, and to ensure that emerging miners get into that opportunity and space of exploration. Because it requires huge amounts of capital that goes into something that you don't know what's in the ground. You know, you can mine, spend a huge amount of money, a billion rand, and then there's nothing. So that's risks that are there. It requires us to develop appropriate incentive packages that looks at a combination of capital availability, the risk factor, incentive supports, development and support for emerging miners, you know, and that's going to be quite critical. And I think that's rather an aspect, you know, depending on where we borrow from, and you know, there are different areas that we can learn from. But I think that's a key thing that did come out of the mining practice again. How do we increase exploration and using the different experiences that we have?
Okay. Thank you. Can I surprise you, please, Mr. Larama?
Son Pakisa. The fact that everybody else is being briefed and this committee is unbriefed, I think, reflects quite badly on this committee. Can I request, Mr. Chair, that one of the first, or in fact, the first item on our schedule for next term is a briefing on Pakisa?
We will brief you, because it may not be the case. But let's deal with it when we deal with the announcement. I don't know how to we will debate, we may have a share as for us, because I didn't tell you when we come back, we are dealing with the budget processes. That's the first item. And we'll be getting the presentation on the A50s and the strategic plans of the department. It's not something that we are given the right to decide whether we'll do it. And on the 90s, I think we'll outline to you. But also, as I said, will also be filled with the issue that the Pakisa itself is talking about, dealing with the MPRDA. So there could be a lot on the table. But one thing that we all agree is the urgency of the matter. But also I think that's I don't want us to raise the issue. Simple is that the honourable members remember we all agreed here. That the department was going to come and present and decide here in this committee that they were not ready because the matter had been dealt with through the PME and therefore we were working in that process. That is to the best of my knowledge. So, but we will find a way of dealing with that issue. I think there's few issues that to me I think remain important. You raise the issue, which I think we'll have to deal with it with the department, probably their fault. But I agree with you. The target in terms of your ownerless, derelict and ownerless mine might be very low. But we'll have to look whether that target is not informed by the budget that the department itself is given. Because if you increase the targets, the question, are you going to get an increased budget to meet that demand, that because you are building a demand in one way or the other. So I think it's important us to deal with that issue. Yes, I think we should agree around it. It might be concerning. But we have to look and again, that is why we said people like yourselves in the department should become to assist more part of this department. One reason, for an example, amongst other issues now, to me, that is ringing. Is it possible that the Department of Mineral Resources can have its own inspectors without collaborating with other departments? For an example, there is no way you can manage environmental compliance if you don't have specialized inspectors on environment, on environmental impact issues. Will you have a health and safety inspector without having a collaboration with the Department of Labor to understand what are those issues that relate to occupational health and safety hazards? But just looking at those things, whether Andrew is running a risk that in terms of the separation of, it can be a separation of duty, but mostly as a separation of task. So I'm saying part of, to me, of that exercise of planning is to begin to assist us to what extent some of the issues cut across in terms of performance. Because I made an example, for example, when the minister was here to say, is it correct that in the entire province, less than Mpumalanga, where there is complete, in the absence of a word, complete chaos, maybe it's too strong a word, but in Mpumalanga you talk about agriculture, there is a problem, competition of agriculture with mining. You talk about environment, there's high levels of pollution, you talk about water contamination, so there are quite a number of these issues, but we've got only one office, and that office is responsible for the entire province. But if you were to go to the Department of Labor, you'll have about
maybe 8 or so labor centers, which amongst those they have got allocated labor inspectors. I'm just saying some of these issues may require that we fine-tune them probably up to the detail on how do we get collaboration amongst the departments. Because in the absence, the problem is that it means if an incident or two or three incidents were to happen in one province, then we may have something that says there's only one person or one office. And I used to make that example and say, if you go to the Eastern Cape, which I would say I know better, something happens, that person must move from Port Elizabeth to where there is a problem that gets reported sometimes to the Wild Coast. That takes you almost a day to arrive there. Now you look at the distances, and it's one person. But you look at the vastness of the province also. So I'm just saying, you may find that when you go to the Eastern Cape, I don't know, well, for me in KZN, and if I'm not mistaken, in KZN there are more than 11, labor centers that are for the Department of Labor. You don't get a similar arrangement when it comes. There's only one Department of Labor. You would be in Durban, and that's it. So I'm just saying, maybe some of these issues may not necessarily be around the questions that we are necessarily dealing with. It would be the structural challenge that we might need to deal with. I'm sure when we come back, we'll deal with some of the issues around the ownerless and derelict mines, because some of them are quite serious. They go just beyond the issues, and I think we agree, the issues of the MD and other matter. But also there are quite a number of serious issues which relate to crime, threats to human settlements, where some of those who build their houses now, they are just sitting in almost staring open holes. So I'm just saying we will need to, that's the issue unfortunately this committee is going to be faced with and is dealing with the budget, whether is it sufficient, whether does it address the mandates that the department has given. I think it's a task. You know, for me, Honorable Smith, I won't go through those until we get the appropriate forum. I don't think I appreciate today, at least you are open. Some of those ideological issues, we will get the space. When that space will get it, I wouldn't, because sometimes when we talk about ideological issues, we create ideology if it's based on one side or one way of thinking. Ideology is always an area that is contested with another. It's a contestation of ideological trends. So we have to look whether that's the route we want to go in South Africans, or we want to go for a route that we think is the best, and even mean if it means sacrificing and compromising our ideological convictions. Because sometimes an ideological conviction may not be necessarily relevant on the prevailing material conditions. It does not necessarily mean it's wrong. Maybe the timing of it may not be necessarily befitting that particular moment. So I don't understand. That's why I'm saying we will take that issue as and when it comes. But my take is always one. Ideology by its very nature is dogmatic. Pragmatism becomes the key that could be able to help all of us in South Africa. I may sit here and I say I believe in socialism or in communism. That's my belief. But would that help us to move the country forward? It may necessarily not be an ideal situation now. And it may not necessarily mean that within the ideology it does not identify how it begins to move forward. So I just want us to say, when we engage in those issues, political stances do not necessarily define ideological positions of individuals or parties. It may just be political choices and stances that people take. But it may happen that we see political parties, in terms of ideological thinking, others are not far from others on the other side by thinking. It's just that it depends which is the dominant at that particular moment from either side. But I'm not in a political lecture now. I'm just dealing with the issues that I think are not being necessary. So let's agree. Clearly, out of these presentations, besides what we are going to be charged within the department, key issues that are beginning to emerge that require this committee to fast track, go with the fullness of speed, and I think I will agree with Honorable Orima, but without selecting the other at the expense of the other one. It's quite clear we need to deal with the issue of Operation Pakistan in mining. Two, we need to deal with the issue of speeding up the processes that relate to the MPRDA. Thirdly, we need to deal with the issues that relate to job losses. And I'm saying, as those become the immediate task that this committee should put them high priority on the list, we will then be able to say, as high priority in the list, besides the other issues that are prescribed by procedures of Parliament, how do we begin so that we don't make the error and mistake of elevating one at the expense of the other and then end up unable to input on the actual process. So we will take that point and say, these are the issues. There is Operation Pagesa, it's quite immediate. There's the issue of the MPRDA. How do we deal? Because it's a consultative process, unfortunately. And I'm sure some, I don't understand tomorrow. This bill has been given to us last year. It has stayed for more than a year. So it will be quite dangerous for the committee. That's my take, that when it is here and everyone is talking about it, we don't know any way to want to deal with Pagesa. My take is that we have, when it's here, the sooner it's, even if it goes without us agreeing, still disagreeing, the fact of the matter is the committee will not be accused of stalled the process. So it has to go. And then we can look on the other issues. But we will go to that one. On that note, Dr. Nichols. Yeah. Okay. No, next time. You are coming back. Yeah, you are coming. Okay, thank you very much. Go well. Go well. Go well. Mashoban, go well. Go well. Go well. Go well.
Sorry, Chair. The members, I only have six slides to go through. They are related to our reading of the DMR's budget, which is the big green document. this document, which you should all have received. It also relates to the strategic plan, which the department tabled in 2014, and which is, I've got a picture of it on the slide there, which sets out the program of the department for the next 5 years. And then the third document is the budget, which was tabled by the Minister of Finance and was circulated in that huge red document a few weeks ago. In the discussion, I'm going to just give a reminder of issues that were raised in the BRRR last year by the committee. I'm not going to go in detail through the budget, as it's already been done, and then I will comment on the annual performance plan measures, the measures of performance which the department has put in place for the coming financial year. The portfolio committee raised one particular issue in the BRRR where the budget allocation fell short of its needs in terms of the mandate that had been given by legislation. And that relates to future growth of the mining sector and its dependence upon continued mineral exploration. The committee noted that a substantial national investment is needed in geological mapping of the order of 1 billion rand on the side of the CGS to provide the knowledge base to attract exploration companies and to assist the state-owned mining company in its exploration endeavours. This issue was also raised in the BRRR in 2014. It was raised in the meeting that the committee had with the CGS in Pretoria, and there has been no response on this issue from the Treasury. When the CGS has been asked, they just say, well, we've made the motivation of the Treasury, and we have no explanation as to why this national investment, 1 billion rand, is not a large sum of money in the greater scheme of things. When you look at the 350 billion rand, which is contributed by mineral exports every year, when you look at the size of the Department of Trade and Industries budget, and this is a single amount, this is not a recurring billion, it's a one-off 1 billion to fund the proper mapping of our geological deposits so that the mining industry can extend beyond 2022. This was, in view of the budgetary constraints which were visible at the end of the last year, this was the only financial issue raised by the committee in its BRRR last year. And as I said, there's been no response on the issue. The legislative and policy issues that are raised by the department in its review, in its plan next year, include three legislative issues: the MPRDA, the review of the Mine Health and Safety Act, which a year later is still somewhere at NEDLAC. I don't know why they need more than a year to deal with a bill. You know, it's already been through public consultation processes. And the third issue is the draft state-owned mining company bill, which was published in January this year, and which the department indicates will be put to Parliament sometime later this year. So there's three legislative interventions that the committee will be expected to make this year. There are then four issues which deal with Parliament's oversight role. The first is the department's intention to conduct a socio-economic impact assessment of identified legislation. The ADP doesn't indicate what that identified legislation is or what the process is that will accompany the socio-economic impact assessments, but this is likely to be welcomed. Secondly, there's a review and implementation of the updated mining charter and a commitment to develop the PASA bill. PASA is the Petroleum Agency of South Africa that regulates for the petroleum sector. There are no hints given in the annual performance plan as to what this PASA bill is. The budget does, however, provide for large sums of money being paid to PASA, not this financial year, but in the coming few financial years after the agency has run out of its reserves. So presumably that the PASA bill has to deal with the mechanisms that will be put in place to govern that money as it goes to PASA. PASA is presently under the control of the Central CEF Group Limited. The last area is the intention of the department to review the Diamonds Act and the Precious Metals Act. These have been long on the agenda, but they have now been put onto the front burner for this coming year. The next slide is a representation which we used last year to indicate the progress of legislation and policy issues for the Department of Mineral Resources. I apologize that this is not in color. I couldn't get a computer to work. But the second graph, the graph that says legislation and policy for 2016-17 from the new APP does have a number of areas which are in grey on these sheets here. They would have been in green on the PowerPoint. But they indicate a number of measures which have been brought into the APP for this year. In particular, the amendments to the Diamond Act and the amendments to the Precious Metals Act, which have been on long-term programs for the department, but they've now been put forward as something that will be dealt with. To what stage, we're not sure, in the current year. The other issue is the mining taxa, which is one of the key inputs into dealing with the whole beneficiation issue and also the future of the mining industry. The amendments to the Mine Health and Safety Act, the SOMPO Bill, the Mining Charter, the NPRDA Bill, I've mentioned already. Good progress has been made on the ex-mine workers. As the Deputy Minister indicates in his introduction, the Department of Labour and the Department of Health are working on the rollout of more of the service centres for mine workers across the country. And then there's the one environmental system for mining, which is now in place and following a constitutional court's judgment last month, has now been confirmed in place as a way for managing environmental issues and conflicts between the different departments going into the future. I must draw your attention to two particular issues, which is issues that were on the plan for the department and which are no longer there. The one is the Women in Mining strategy, which finds no mention at all. They refer to women's issues here, but the particular Women in Mining strategy, which was introduced to the committee last year, is not referred to in the APP. The geoscience regulations, there's no indication of how or when the budget, and this is a recurring 100 million rand a year, not 100 million? Yes, it's a recurring 100 million rand a year, which is needed to implement the geoscience regulations, which were gazetted in 2008, but which have not been fully implemented because of the lack of a budget. On the illegal, the law against illegal mining, there's no indication in the APP on how that will be dealt with. And also on the issues of compensation for workers for occupational diseases, it's not fully a prerogative of the department. The department is responsible for making sure that the conditions in place that people don't get sick. They're responsible for zero harm. But the compensation issues, which are burning issues for many ex-mine workers across the country, those issues are dealt with by the Department of Health and by the Department of Labour. And it was in 2011 that the Constitutional Court said that the provisions for mine workers under that act are paltry and inferior to those in other acts. And that is 5 years ago, and there's been no movement on that issue at all. The other issues mentioned here are the amendment of the Mindic Act, which is a long-term process, and then the issue of mine liquidation, which has been raised several times by this committee, but which finds no evident points in the annual performance plan. The next graph, or the next table, is just a comparison of the number of performance measures which have been put in place for the department. These will be discussed, I don't doubt, by the department when it presents the APP in April. But just to point out that there are a very large number of performance measures, 101, down from 103 last year, and 5 of the measures have been substantially, 13 of them are new, and 3 of them have been revised. And this follows a technical evaluation of strategic objectives and measures of each of the branches, and the alignment of national objectives, which we heard about earlier in the presentation today. there are a few areas of concern which I just want to bring to your attention. First is the significant downward shift in the targets for environmental verification inspections. The point has already been made that the owners and derelict mines are one thing, and by the way, the target has been reduced from 50 to 45 there for budgetary reasons. But the number of inspections for environmental verification has been reduced by a quarter, from 1,700, which was in the previous plans, to 1,275. There is nevertheless an increase in the number of staff in the environmental mineral resource inspectorate. Chair, you mentioned the issue of inspection of environmental issues, and this is indeed an area where the Department of Mineral Resources is the responsible authority for making sure that environmental issues are inspected in the industry. The budget has been cut from 38 million to 27 million, and as I say, the number of inspections which are intended has been reduced markedly. This is at a time when the new One Environmental System for mining has come into place, and since December 2014, the department is responsible for a whole lot of new functions and new challenging functions with regards to the environment. Again, there is no reporting framework that is provided for in the annual performance plan. The department provides a wonderful mine health and safety report for their inspectorate every year, but there's no similar inspectorate or no similar report for the environmental mineral resource inspectors. So this is the document produced by the Department of Environmental Affairs for the so-called Green Scorpions. Green Scorpions deal with environmental law infringement across the country. It's a really excellent report that's been done now for 10 years. There are no Green Scorpions responsible for the mining industry. It is the Department of Mineral Resources that's responsible for that. And this is an area that is missing from the annual performance plan. Then the second issue, or the other two issues, are that there is no performance measure for SAMRAD, for the South African Mineral Resource Administration database, which is the cadastre system, which again we heard about earlier today, which is an absolute fundamental building block of the management of mineral resources for the benefit of everything, so that we know who's got the mineral rights and what they're doing with them. This information has been requested from the department several times in the past year, and it has not been forthcoming. But the BRRR recommended that there should be a performance measure for SAMRAD, for this cadastre system. It has not been responded to. Also, the department has not responded by putting in place a performance measure for the Women in Mining strategy, which was also recommended in the BRRR. Finally, on the two key issues for consideration by Parliament, I will not say anything further about the MPRDA, but a major concern is the need for transformation in the mining industry. We had the court case yesterday in Johannesburg about the once empowered, always empowered controversy. Transformation is a key objective of the MPRDA, but it is very hard to judge the performance of the DMR on achieving this goal from the annual performance plan, from the objectives, from the measures that are put in place. The names of the mines that were not compliant according to the 2015 audit have not been revealed to the Portfolio Committee, again despite explicit and repeated requests from the committee for this information. And if you recall, the committee last year delayed its deliberation on the mine charter and on its effects until it could get this essential information to guide it in making its recommendations or framing its views. Yes, okay. Those are all the issues I wanted to raise, Chair.
Okay. Any questions? Anyway, it seeks to assist members that when we deal with the department and its entities, we might have specific issues that we need to focus on.
Let me say, that is the reason that we invited all people that can help so that we are ready and we do our work effectively. There is nothing difficult like you are given a task and because of capacity you are unable to perform the task to the maximum. One person once said, it is not a bad thing to be ignorant. You can be ignorant not because you take time to recollect mentally. You can be ignorant simply because you are not informed. So knowledge is very critical. That's why they say ignorance is quite expensive. So it's very important that we get information first so that we apply a maximum concentration on the work that we're supposed to do. And this is to help us to do those duties. We would have liked, and let me say this, you know what is good about, I don't want to say this, I'm saying it with extra caution. What is good about academics is that they can say things differently, but still they won't feel that there is a contradiction on what they are saying. But it's okay. We did extend the invitation to the Treasury, and the Treasury, I'm told this, now you say I'm not a better for a couple, I speak, you say something, I raise it officially. They were quite satisfied that the department, you know, AG managed the Treasury, yeah, but they are finalists. the AG, they said they were satisfied that the department has complied with many of the concerns that they have raised. So it's okay. We will see. On that note, can we now go to the next item? Before we go to the item, before the last item. Minutes? How many examples? Whatever now. Do you have many honorable members? Why choose me? I don't have them. Big me. Honorable Lorna? Do you have minutes? What? Why didn't I get mine? You know all what it says here. It's a notice. Where are they here? Where is the minute? Yeah. The fact that there is an extra copy means some people unintentionally found themselves being in possession of unauthorized committee property in abundance. Page one. Honorable Mandel. Oh, yes.
Honorable Chair.
Correct.
We have a huge dispute now on page one. It says Mr. ZMT Mandel. And now, below that, it then goes to say Khosi M. Matlang. Ah, it's unfair.
Okay. Soon Pagas in a figure. Okay, we're done with page one. Huh?
card.
Honorable beginning, he just wanted to write the TikTok name. Maybe that's why he put it like that. On page 2, nothing. Nothing. Okay. Matter of arising. Oh, yeah. Any more for the minute? Honorable Mashala or Hoshi Mashala?
I move for the adoptions of the minutes of 9 March 2016. Thank you so much.
Any second, Honorable Nyambi? Okay. Matter of arising, page 1. Is work in progress, so it's an item. Page 2. Honorable members, I think on the issue of the we still have to work out, but members can assist. On the issue of the Anglo-American and Anglo-Ashanti, we are still trying to see where can we locate that process. But probably we think also the research and the content advisor, so we'll work on the possible implications of that settlement in general, all the work that we've been doing in terms of the airline workers' challenges. But underscore, I guess there are no matters arising. Announcements. Honorable members, we are in a tight corner. We are supposed at least, hopefully, confirm coming back on the 12th. And if we come back on the 12th, we are told the party vote will be only probably on the 19th. It means the work that we'll have to do, we'll have to squeeze it to an extent that by a week before, we must have almost 5 days or 4 days before we must have finalized. The 19th is Tuesday. It means at least by this day, we must have finalized. But hopefully, there is a talk, we'll hear it probably after the programming coming. There is a talk that we might come earlier on the 5th. So if we come back on the 5th, the suggestion is that by the 6th, by the 6th, we must have done with the presentation of all the department and all the entities, which takes us now to a compromise by members of this committee who sit in other committees of making sure that Tuesday, which is the 5th, we do the presentation by the department and the man health and safety, which will be almost the whole day, and then the following day, which is the 6th, we do the rest of the entities, and then we are done. And then we will get time to do the adoption of the minutes of 5 and 6, as well as the adoption of the budget vote report. Now, looking at that point, we are looking at we are being hopeful that it won't be a long tracking meeting. We are looking at finding a way, because those are the two actions, finding a way whether we can slot in the meantime the issue of a presentation on mining practice, and then immediately from there we roll over on other activities. We don't want to sound like if we are going to deal with mining practice, we don't want to sound like we are squeezing members to quickly agree on the budget vote report so that we can go to that. Look, we don't think those, we'll also have a full day during that period, so we hope that that full day can be utilized to deal with the presentation on mining practice, if it is agreed. But as I say, all this is subject to what the program is given to us, which unfortunately is not yet finalized today. We will only know tomorrow. What we will try and do then, honorable members, if it is confirmed with the way that it is, we will then have to send it to them. And then, because after the budget vote, we have to deal with the issue of the MPRDA. So that is the challenge that we are gonna be having. We will do that and then try to forward it to you. Whilst on the other side, it will mean it's approved, it will be subject to intervening processes, whether we want to prioritize another one, but this is how we're suggesting it's going to be taking place. If it changes, we're coming back on the 12th, we then again find a way of how to squeeze in order to meet the deadline for the 19th. On that note, honorable members, we wish you all the best. See you on the 5th, or see you on the week of the 12th. Hopefully you have a better recess, enjoy the Easter period, make sure that you comply with the rules. So we don't want more statistics, we still want to see you in peace, not in pieces. Honorable Smith?
Mr. Chair, whatever happens between the week of the 4th and the 8th of April, please note my apologies, as I'm with a Judicial Service Commission meeting that all.
So there is another apology. Anyway, there was another standing apology. I guess it's going to be there. No, I'm saying that there's another. Here in this community, we have two Judicial Commission members. I'm saying that standing apology, I'm sure, is already standing if you will be there, because it's going to be there also. So it means we are already short of two members. Three.
Is he other JC member?
No. You should know your member, your colleagues. You should know your colleagues there. As long as you will be around on the 13th, because we are only adopting the report on the 13th, which requires at least that we must be a quorum. So it's okay. I'm sure Honorable Lorma will represent you very well. Thank you very much. We stand adjourned until then.